everybody. Welcome to another episode of Kitchen Gods. This is episode 18. I'm Michelle, and with me as always is Ken.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Episode 18 is awesome. How did episode 17 do? It sounded good.
I thought it sounded really good.
Yeah, it was fun. Everybody listened.
It was a long one. And then let us know in the comments. I mean, there's always the comments available on our website, kitchengodspodcast.com.
Yep.
If you are enjoying a particular aspect or a little bit annoyed, feel free to sign in and let us know.
But still rate it high. Yeah. You can put it whatever you want in the comments. Just give it a high
rating.
Yeah.
You know, it takes like no effort. If you're listening on Apple, just go and hit the stars, preferably all 5-star button. And, you know, you can leave a little note, let us know what you're thinking about it and how much you love it and how much we love you. Yeah.
It doesn't just make us feel good. The magical iTunes algorithm, when that stuff happens, can shoot shows up in the rankings just from new subscribers, even if it's a couple and good reviews, and that it throws it all into this like bingo thing, you know, this Tumblr that iTunes uses, and somebody there's mixing it up and it pops out. It's like, oh, you're number 3 today. And that's what happens. It's slightly less technical than that.
We need to get more exposure.
Yes.
Without having to expose ourselves, because that's not the kind of news we want to be in. No.
How was your, it was Michelle's birthday the other day.
It was my birthday.
17 years old.
17. Almost, plus 30 or so. Yeah. It was great. It?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a great birthday. My husband threw me this surprise Zoom party, which was hysterical and lots of fun, like seeing all these faces that I miss so much. And that was great. That was awesome. And then we went out for dinner, and then my parents snuck into New York City yesterday and showed up for the day.
Yeah. I didn't realize they had checkpoints now. I know it's on lockdown and all, but
I was made in Germany. My dad, who's an army guy.
Tell by the label.
But he could not go east because he was one of these guys that had these tactical nuclear weapon backpacks. So he was in this town called Fulda. And if the Russians were going to start to come over the mountains, the deal was that our American soldiers would go and drop these backpack nukes into the ground. They had special little tunnels for them.
Wow.
And it would blow up not just themselves and the entire town, but the whole mountains would come collapsing down. So the Russians couldn't get over.
Oh, good.
So yeah, he was one of those. He wasn't allowed to go visit, the other side because he knew things.
Well, sure. And now everybody knows things.
And now everybody knows things. Now I get to know all about my dad's fascinating past.
That's a whole episode in itself. If we can come up with something that he, you know, created in a kitchen, but the aside from you, because that puts him in.
I don't know how it happened. I don't want to know.
Yeah, exactly. Don't tell me that. Well, there was a. Never mind. I was gonna go with a nuclear backpack into a hole analogy, but we can skip that. So, my goodness.
Sorry, Mom and Dad.
What a dirty show this is.
They're loyal listeners too. Yeah. They're gonna be horrified.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I want to hear all about.
No. Just about
that.
The backpack.
Just about the tactical nuclear devices.
I just like
devices.
Saying tactical nuclear weapons.
I
backpack
think
tactical
that's fantastic.
Weapons.
I mean, aside it's from so it being cool. a nuclear weapon, but still, yeah, I dig it.
I mean, you gotta wonder.
Yeah. Yeah. And in baking news, my wife, well, starts with my daughter. My daughter's 8, and I was putting her to bed the other night, and she asked me to take a picture of something she found in an Amelia Bedelia book, which I love Amelia Bedelia books. And she said, I found a recipe in an Amelia Bedelia book for chocolate cake, and I want to send it to Mom. I was like, okay. So I took a picture of it. I sent it to her.
Was Mom in the other room?
Mom was downstairs. Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's not like Mom was not in West Germany with a tactical nuclear backpack or anything. She was, you know, 14 feet away down the stairs. But I took a picture of it and I sent it to my daughter's school email account, which she now has because they all do. And then she composed an email to my wife saying, I said, Dear Mom, I found this chocolate recipe in an Amelia Bedelia book and I would like to try it. Love, Phoebes. And we sent it which warmed, you know, my wife's heart, of course, you know. So they baked it tonight. My wife and my daughter baked it tonight and it was delicious. It was
That's awesome
chocolate cake. It was like, you know, and my wife bakes frequently and she's made cakes from scratch And then often, you know, it's so much quicker with the mixes, you know. So right, we often just jump to the mix, but this was way better than the mixes, I thought.
We'll have to post it.
Yeah. Well, I'll send it. And it used, and she remarked that it used vinegar and baking soda to rise. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was, and they're like a volcano, like a science experiment with the volcano. So like it was bubbling.
Neat. Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. Well, speaking of recipes, one of the funny things, as my parents are leaving last night, my dad opens up the trunk of the car and he's like, oh, you might want these. And he pulls out some kind of like flyer like cookbooks. So not big, heavy cookbooks, but something that, you know, companies would have put out. And they were from my grandmother and my great grandmother. Hmm. So they're going to like 1920s, and there's some doodles, pencil doodles in there. Oh, and it was either my grandmother, my mom, who had like gone in there and done some doodling. But the recipes are crazy. Two of them are from Crisco, things that they had put out. And everything is just deep fried, deep fried cheese balls, deep fried pickle fritters, deep fried. And
one tub of Crisco.
There's a lot of Crisco going on in here. But it's there's so much fun to go through and like, you know, how to make the best biscuits and all this fun stuff. So that was like the best thing. And they were totally like, if you don't want them, you can throw them away. I'm like, oh, these are precious. They're so cool. And these, you know, they looked through them and I just, really fun.
Nice. That's cool. Nostalgia too.
Very nostalgic.
More things you should post on Instagram.
Right.
Yeah.
I did. I put it in the stories, I think. I think I did put it on Postagram
that too. The next hottest social media fad.
Quick, TM it.
Trump will shut it down. It's okay though.
Oh, his taxes came out today.
I did.
Dun, 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 dun.
I know. Yeah. We can't get political on this show, but.
No, we won't get political.
My goodness. The only thing I'll say is that there's never, ever, ever, ever been anything surprising about him. it is as face value as you can get with it's like, well, of course that's what that is. That's what else did you expect?
Yeah, it would be weird if that was not the case.
Exactly.
Yes. Exactly. All right, so episode 18. Yay.
What are we doing?
Ready to get into this?
Absolutely.
So our kitchen god's name today is Ruth. Ruth and Udstad Vertel. It's a mouthful.
Easy for you to say.
Easy for you to say, is it? She was born in 1927, and she's born in New Orleans, so hi, Rush.
Hmm.
Her dad was an insurance salesman, and her mother was a kindergarten teacher. In 1932, so we're like during the Great Depression, it's hitting everybody super, super hard. She and her whole family moved to where her mom was from, Plyamenis Parish. It's about an hour from New Orleans.
Okay.
So she's still in Louisiana.
Sure.
What
year was this?
This is in 1932.
Got it. Okay.
So just like now, wherever there's just like this mass exodus, I've seen so many people move back home. In our building alone, we've had two different apartments vacate for people going back to where they came from.
Wherever is not New York City.
Wherever's not New York City.
Correct.
And I think that's happening all over the country. Yes. People are moving back in with their parents.
Yeah. Where they can afford to live or where it's,
you know, or next door where you've got built-in childcare and help there. So so she and her whole family moves to where her mother's from. And Ruth is super smart. She's crazy, crazy smart, which seems to be a kitchen god theme.
Yeah.
All of them.
Thank goodness.
For the most part.
Yeah, yeah.
She skipped several grades in elementary school. She graduated high school at 15 years old.
Wow.
It's crazy. Yep. Her brother, Sig, had fought in World War II and he had GI benefits. Okay. So the family uses his GI benefits so that she can go to college, which was very rare back then. Mm-hmm. She goes to Louisiana State University and graduated by the time she was 19 with honors and degrees in chemistry and physics.
Okay.
So very male-dominated fields of study, and she's kicking butt and taking names. In 1946, she starts a brief stint teaching. So she's still like super early 20s. And she's teaching at McNee University, but after about two semesters, she kind of quits and washes out. Teaching
is
not really not for her. I assume science or chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
In 1948, she marries Rodney Fertel. And we have to talk about Rodney for a minute. Okay. So she's still early 20s. Rodney was eccentric.
Mm.
Quite the New Orleans eccentric type. He loved to travel the world and he would use oat sacks as his luggage.
Okay.
He was a very wealthy man, yet still oat sack luggage. Sure. It's very strange. He would always take a golf club with him wherever he traveled, just in case he could work on his swing.
Makes sense.
So here's this, you know, kind of eccentric, crazy man walking around with empty sacks of oats and a golf club. He and Ruth both really loved horses. That's really what they had like connected on.
Okay.
They get married. They have two sons and with each other, not the horses.
Good. Thank you for clarifying.
Ruth and Rodney started a racing horse stable in 1951 in Baton Rouge.
Okay.
Ruth was the first female licensed in all of Louisiana to train thoroughbreds. She's quite accomplished at this.
Okay.
But sadly, their marriage fizzles out, falls apart, and they divorce in 1958. So okay. She wasn't with Rodney 10 years later when he runs for mayor of New Orleans.
Okay.
And when he runs for mayor, he runs on the platform of, our zoo needs a gorilla, like really bad. This is what I'm going to do for you.
Listen, that sounds, of any political platform you could choose, that is a very valid one. A new gorilla.
Yes.
How do you argue that?
We deserve it. Yeah. Our zoo here deserves it. And our zoo is pathetic. The zoo in New Orleans back then was like tiny little, they had no gorilla. It was one, it was gorilla free.
Duh.
Two, it was dark and it was just tiny little cages with lots of bars. It was super depressing. And he was very much, Rodney's like, no,
it was a couple of alligators and squirrels that hadn't got caught by the locals for food.
And those were the ones that had paid for the fare to get in. So what Rodney would do is he would wear a pith helmet and go around town campaigning with a man dressed up in a gorilla suit.
Nice.
And he's like, you know, a vote for Rodney's, a vote for gorillas for the zoo. It's going to be amazing, everybody. This next part is super shocking. He only got 310 votes. So 10th place, apparently at least 10 people were running.
The gorilla got more.
Yeah, exactly. His pith helmet came in second.
Right.
So sadly, he did not win, but he kept his word. And being an eccentric millionaire, he flies to Singapore and he brings back two orphaned lowland baby gorillas.
Why didn't he just do that in the first place?
I mean, but then he wouldn't get to walk around with his buddy dressed up in the gorilla suit.
He's a millionaire. He could have done that.
I suppose.
But I guess if there's a chance you could be mayor of New Orleans.
I could have been mayor. Yeah. So he's like not Tiger mayor.
King. I got you.
But the zoo now has two wonderful little baby gorillas. Okay. He was instrumental in converting the New Orleans Zoo from a depressing, dark place to this beautiful, wide open center for animals.
It's now like the Audubon Center.
It is. It's the Audubon Center. Yeah. And it's, have you been?
A long time ago. Yeah. My ex was from Baton Rouge and I spent a lot of time down there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I love it down there. We haven't been down in forever, but it's a magical, magical place. And I remember walking to the Audubon, you go through and there are all these, you know, trees with the weeping stuff coming off of them.
The weeping stuff, that's what they call it. Yeah. No, I know. It's beautiful.
Rush is going to yell
if
at
it's
us.
Not, If it wasn't, you know, for the 142% humidity, it's a beautiful place to be year round.
It's not the heat.
it's the humidity. It's the swampiness of it all.
So yeah, I mean, Rodney sounds awesome, but he also sounds like a lot to deal with. A little extra, so I kind of get why it might not have worked out with Ruth.
Sure.
But you know, I'm sure it was fun while it lasted. Mm-hmm. So now Ruth is on her own and she has two teenage sons to support.
Okay.
She gets alimony from him, but it's not enough. It's not enough to, you know, keep food on the table. And these two kids want to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
So she starts making money by selling drapes that she's making out of her house. But let's not forget, she went to college, you know, she finished college at 19. Yeah. She's a brilliant woman. Remembering that, she took a job in 1961 as a lab technician at the Tulane University of Medicine, making about $4,800 a year.
Oh, wow.
Which is not a lot, but it's 1960.
In the 60s.
It's 61.
Yeah, that's...
It's nothing.
Yeah.
She's not making enough. She's got to figure out what to do. So have you ever heard of a turnkey with a lease, like a turnkey lease?
In context, in what kind of context? I use the word a lot, but
when you see a restaurant for sale, usually the restaurant's not really for sale. Like, especially in New York City, if you see something that it's a turnkey for sale, that means they'll let you buy the lease. And when you buy that lease, you're also getting all of the... in there. You're getting the ovens, you're getting the refrigeration.
Any licenses they already have. It's just you just walk in and begin operating. Got it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like a restaurant that's just waiting for you to go and put your little stamp on. But they're super, super expensive, you know, especially in New York City. It's a lot. Sure. It's a lot of money. So she sees an ad for this restaurant for sale.
Okay.
And it's a 60-seat restaurant on 1100 North Broad Street. It had originally opened on February 5th in 1927, which happens to be her birthday, the same day she was born.
Interesting.
And she takes this as a sign.
Sure.
She can't not do this. How do you pass that up? Yeah. How do you pass that up? She's completely compelled, and everybody is telling her, you're nuts. Mm-hmm. One, you don't know how to cook. you don't know anything about running a restaurant. You know nothing about even being a waitress. This is insanity. Why would you do this? Mm-hmm. Not to mention that this restaurant, born on the same day as her, has never succeeded. It's gone out of business over 5 times.
Poor location, so, or
six
just,
times.
Yeah. Over five. over less than 7 times.
Less than 7 times, more than 5. The owner had been this guy, Chris Matulich. And
do I know where you're going with this?
Maybe.
It's exciting.
So Ruth says, cram it to everybody. She's like, no, I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. This is happening. She mortgages her house, scrapes together $22,000, and opens up on March 24th in 1965.
Okay.
On her first day, she sells 35 steaks at $5 a pop. And within the first 6 months, she's already doubled her, what was admittedly a crappy salary before, but she's making money.
Mm-hmm.
She's making a living wage all of a sudden running this steakhouse. Ruth's.
Yep, that's where I figured you were going. Nice. Uh-huh. And she brought in the previous owner who failed several times, Chris.
So when you do this turnkey, part of it was that she had to keep Chris's name on it. So Chris, it became Chris's Steakhouse.
Nice.
And that's where it had all started. Nice. And so she didn't just bankroll the restaurant and hire people who knew what they were doing to come in. She completely immersed herself in all of it, and all 5'2" of her. So she's this tiny little woman, diminutive. And that reminds me of a friend of mine, Chef Janet Crandall. And we used to teach together at the French Culinary Institute, now International Culinary Center. And Janet is also like lower end of 5 feet. She's this super cute, amazing, engaging teacher. But you're like, she's small. She's one of the best butchers in the country.
Wow.
She can take apart. I mean, when Pat LaFrieda needs a butcher, they'll like call her work on a book. She's just an amazing chef. And I mean, she can take apart an entire steer or an entire pig. And I just think that's so flipping cool. She moved out to LA. So anybody out in LA, you should look her up. It's Janet Crandall, C-R-A-N-D-A-L-L. That's her website as well. But she teaches classes and stuff. She's just out of this world amazing. And I mean, that really, you know, brings me back to Ruth learning how to butcher sides of meat all by herself. And you know, she brought people in to teach her, but you know, she's this tiny little woman with a huge jigsaw
cutting apart a cow in the backyard.
You know, and a short loin can weigh 30 pounds, and she's using a giant bandsaw to break it down, and it's dangerous.
Awesome.
She totally did it, and she got really, really good at it. But beyond just working in back of house, butchering her own meat, she had to run front of house. So all of the waitresses, the bussers, the dishwashers, the cook, the host, everything. She hires the most dependable, hardest working people she knows. Single moms. All of them.
Interesting.
Single moms. And she has the first restaurant, high-end restaurant in New Orleans that is all female. In the front.
Wow.
Ruth, it's such a hard thing for me to say. And she hated the name too. She hated the name, but you could, once it
that was had the brand equity, she, had to have it,
she couldn't get rid of it.
Yeah, no.
So yeah, Ruth's Chris Steakhouse is doing really, really well. And from the beginning, it's attracting local politicians, any local celebrities, anyone visiting town. You know, New Orleans is big and lots of people come through there. So she's doing great. She's making tons of money and helping all these other single mothers at the same time. She bought a second property to use as a party space.
Okay.
She's going to start expanding and doing some bigger catering things. And as soon as she signs this 10-year lease on the restaurant, renews it, it goes up in flames.
Oh, no.
The 60-seat restaurant that she has established and made work so well is gone overnight. Within 7 days, she turns that party space into the new restaurant.
Wow.
It has 160 seats now. Wow. And it just expands. It's huge. It's now on 711 Broad Street. With the key money from the first restaurant space, she's agreed to not use the original restaurant's name. So the new space is now called Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. So the original 60-seater was Chris's Steakhouse.
Got it.
But now she's going to call it Ruth's Chris. So she can, piggyback on that old branding, but still personalize it in a way. She buys two of these long, skinny houses behind it. They're called shotgun houses. Mm-hmm. They're like super long and skinny, weird houses. And she connects them and she lives there for the rest of her life.
Wow. Right behind the restaurant.
Right behind the restaurant. This big old restaurant. There is a loyal customer. His name is TJ Moran. M-O-R-A-N, Moran. Mm-hmm. And he's a great businessman and a total philanthropist. And he saw potential in her steakhouse. So he starts talking to her. He's like, you got a franchise. Mm-hmm. That's new at the time still.
Okay.
It's not, a huge thing beyond a couple of fast food joints. He convinces her to sell him a franchise, which means she's always going to get the proportion of the profits. Mm-hmm. And that any franchises are going to live up to her standard and, use the same logo, the same menu, et cetera. And he starts one on the outside of Baton Rouge and eventually goes on to open up 11 more of them because they're all just wildly successful. Ruth never had to look for people to open franchises beyond that. Everybody came to her. So people would go to one of these restaurants and they would say, yes, this is what we need in Cincinnati. This is what we need in Tokyo, whatever. And they would come back to her and throw money at her so that they could open up one of these franchises. Now there are over 135 locations. Wow. It's worldwide.
Yeah.
It's huge. She stayed really involved in the business until she got sick. She was a really heavy smoker.
Okay.
And in 1999, she got sick. So she sold off the franchise to Madison Dearborn Partners of Chicago.
Okay.
So they are the ones that own the franchise now. They are the ones that got the PPL bailout.
With that was the whole controversy where they, yes I gotcha.
So when there was the government bailout for payroll protection, some really big companies like this got the bailout instead of smaller mom and pop grocery stores and restaurants around around towns and stuff. And the reason why that's upsetting is because larger companies like this would have had access to bank loans.
Right.
Whereas, if I owned a little restaurant on the corner, nobody's giving me money right now.
Right. Right.
They really need the PPL. So that's a bummer. But she has nothing to do with that. She's
she's free and clear.
Long removed. Yeah. So she died when she was 75 years old. And she is buried in this mausoleum. And what's interesting about this mausoleum is that it's shared with Lana Duke. Now, Lana Duke is another rags to riches story. They are very, very close friends. And they had met when Lana had approached Ruth to sell ad space in her newspaper. She was a salesman for the New Orleans Catholic newspaper.
Okay.
And as soon as they met, they became very, very fast friends.
Okay.
Since 1968, they've been like best friends. Lana went on to open up her own ad agency. So she started selling ad space in some crummy little newspaper and then opened up her own gangbuster advertising firm. It was an integral part of the branding of Ruth's Steakhouses. Huh. So she took on all of the logos, branding. Lana eventually got up the nerve to ask her, can I open up a few franchises too? And she went on to open up a few of the Ruth's Chris franchises on her own. And she's like made all of this money. And I mean, Lana had grown up in Canada and come down to New Orleans when a flight attendant friend of hers told her it was, a fun place to come and live for a young woman. Mm-hmm. She had been orphaned. She had been abused as a child. She'd had a really, really rough go of it. So her success was really hard fought and incredibly deserved. And she was always giving back as well. They have this mausoleum built. Mm-hmm. They spent together $500,000 on this 27-foot plot in a cemetery. It's granite. It is just humongous. It's full of stained glass windows.
It's just the two of them in there?
Well, they have room for their families.
I see. Okay.
So on one side of the mausoleum is Ruth's, Ruth's room for her and her kids and whatnot. And Lynn's got her side. But, I think it's really, sweet that these girls wanted to be like, let's have our own mausoleum.
Eternity.
So in 1999, they had a party when they were both still alive to christen it.
Oh,
so
wow.
Once it's done being built, they had this huge party at the graveyard.
Is it in New Orleans?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, funerals are celebrations in New Orleans.
Yeah. That's so cool. So yeah, she had spent her entire life working really, really hard and making sure she was giving other single mothers specifically opportunities to excel and grow. And she gave back. She was a huge philanthropist. She gave back tons of money and set up all sorts of foundations that support education from kindergarten to college. It was a huge.
Do they still is it still all do they stick with that kind of female front of house tradition, or is it with the franchise, or is it just very?
I think it's different now. Yeah. Okay. That's been lost by the wayside. Yeah. It's something that was more that was special for the time because it was very hard for single mothers to get work. You know, who's going to trust a single mom to, you know,
right,
show up for work every day? And the exactly. fact is these people tend to be more dependable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, she's our kitchen god for this week.
She's awesome.
It's a short one.
Yeah. When was the last time you were at Ruth's, Chris?
There's one near Barclays Center. I don't know. Well, it's at least a year ago.
Oh, okay. So still way more recent than me. It's been several years since I've been. The connoisseurs are like, you know, that's like every day. That's a commoner, you know, place to go if you think you want good steak.
It's like the Benihana.
Yeah, exactly. But you're still getting an awesome meal. I mean, it's mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to get a bad steak there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, compared to some of the places in New York that are, you know, the super hoity-toity ones.
But, I would much rather go to a Ruth's Chris from 1970s than I would now, for sure.
Yeah.
Now I just want some cream spinach fried onions.
Yeah, I know. The sides are the best thing at a steakhouse usually.
Or
gratin potatoes.
And it's putting that big knob of butter on the steak as it comes out to you.
Everything's better with a giant blob of butter on it.
Yeah, I pretty much, if I make salmon, it gets a big blob of butter at the end. If I'm making steak, it's a big blob of butter at the end.
So we get those meal boxes, which mm-hmm. we should get as a sponsor for this podcast, by the way. There's a lot of hotel butter, you know, on mm-hmm. on the meat, but virtually every recipe is lemon zest. It has lemon zest in just about everything. And I'm looking out for my wife. She knows I'm so tired of lemon zest because it's like in everything. It's like, this dish does not need lemon zest. It doesn't. It certainly doesn't need it in the quantity that they specify. And she's even toned it down like 2/3 for me when she cooks. It's like it's like 4 ounces of lemon zest. No, it doesn't need.
That's a lot of lemon zest.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's like three lemons. And so
the steak does not need lemon zest.
No, they're good otherwise. I mean, and in this pandemic situation, it's been a nice way to not just fall into that repetitive rut. Too mm-hmm. without going out.
We'll have to have steak. I had
cheesesteak tonight. That's what I was craving.
Nice.
So yeah, a good cheesesteak was nice from a local place that did.
There could be some Kitchen God episodes about cheesesteaks.
Pat's and Gino's. You got to do a whole thing mm-hmm. about them. So this is fun, Michelle. I like Ruth's Chris. I like the story. I think it's inspiring, whether or not she stayed married to the gorilla dude. Of all of the cooking from New Orleans and from Louisiana, and you know, it is to have a staple steak place born mm-hmm. there out of sweat and tears, basically, and you know, she's able to turn around. What was it that the previous owner was unsuccessful with? What was the secret that made her successful?
I mean, luck. I don't know what he was doing wrong. That's pure luck and pure
butter.
I think.
Yeah, lemon
butter
zest.
And then pluck and hard work. I mean, she couldn't fail. Failure was not an option.
No. Okay.
You know? And so she made it work.
I'm going with the single moms.
Single moms for the win.
Yeah.
Ruth kicked butt, took names. It's too bad she had a cigarette hanging out of her mouth most of the time. But yeah, very cool. Very cool lady. Gosh, New Orleans, you could just do multiple episodes about all the different
everything.
Food that's come out of there, and it's fascinating food scene.
Michelle and I have a friend, Rush, internet friend. I'm assuming you haven't met him in person either.
No.
Yeah, we haven't met in person, but he's an internet friend. Hopefully he's listening, but he's also an architect. I'm a former architect. That was our connection, but he is constantly posting. He has he's got a connection to a restaurant, I'm assuming in New Orleans it's Trayvon Meat, and mm-hmm. every day he's posting up the photo of their special on social media. I'm like, I just have to ship this stuff here because it's it just mouthwatering. Every picture he puts up is just mouthwatering. Cool. Yeah, it's cool.
I went to high school with a guy, Brad Bohannon, and his wife, and they opened up a place called Spirits on Bourbon in New Orleans, which is a really fun big bar, which I haven't been to. All I know is the pictures, but it's, you know, lots of big skull drinks that look like you can have one and then, you know,
be done for a year and a half.
Be done for a year and a half and maybe wake up with a child. Or a new tattoo, car.
What happens in New Orleans stays in New Orleans because you don't get to leave either.
In jail. Yeah. Some of the best food there. But yeah, if you're soft able to go to New Orleans, go there now. Everyone's drinking on the streets anyway there.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go inside.
So yeah, that's Ruth for this week. Thank you guys for all tuning in. We appreciate it so much. Again, t-shirts are now available. Yay. If you go to kitchengodspodcast.com, you can also, you know, shoot us a comment there. Let us know you're listening and like it. And thank you for subscribing and sharing this with your friends. We love you. And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye. Thanks, Michelle.
Bye. Thanks, Ken.
All right. Bye.